So we've been talking in some of these previous episodes about bringing on a special guest, and we've been talking about it. We had never done that, and so all of that changes today. Brace yourself, America.
It's our very special episode. We have talked about very special episodes before.
It's appropriate that today
it's
kind of
like Blossom.
Or different strokes.
Or Family Ties.
Oh.
Yeah. See what I did there?
Oh, well, who's here today, Kevin?
So, dear friend of mine, Mr. Jeff Ryder, who is... Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, thank you.
Who is Jeff writes comic books, lives in San Francisco, and lived here in Austin for many, many years.
All of those things are true.
He is my partner in crime and the 20 by 2 show, which by the time that this airs, will have already... We will have already done that. So hopefully whoever's listening to this went and you had an amazing time. If not, I hope you feel remorse and go to the next one. So
just the remorse, really.
Just the remorse. Really.
Or you could have gone and you feel the remorse.
Frankly,
anyway.
We hope if you missed it, you're heaping shame upon yourself at this moment. And that's what you deserve.
Yeah. And one of the things that we always like to do at the top of these is sort of just start with an unrelated tale. And because Jeff is new to the table, we kind of dropped it on him that we would like him to share a tell us a little story.
And I've been checking out you guys' pod. I particularly enjoy some of Shane's tales of folks he knew in the past. So my lead in is in that vein, so to speak. Kevin and I actually met back in the day when I was working at a brew pub in Lubbock, Texas, called Hub City Brewery, where I was the head barman or whatever the term was at the time.
Barkeep.
And we had a guy who played there pretty regularly, just sort of a one-man acoustic show, named Wade Roberts. And Wade had kind
of...
Is that
a plug for Wade? Sorry to interrupt.
I have no idea what happened to Wade Roberts, where he is, what's going on. I very briefly owned a recording...
He's in Wilson Phillips now?
He may be. Wilson Phillips Roberts?
Wilson Phillips Roberts. You can catch him on the I Don't Know Where He Is network.
He also appears in the What the Fuck Happened to That Guy podcast pretty regularly. But Wade had a specific method of doing sound check every day. He had come across a name, actually, that he had decided was the perfect sound check name. And the name belonged to a really good friend of his who played music with him every now and then and was also a part of a handful of bands in Lubbock. It was a cat named Alan Sorsby. And Alan was sort of famous for, at least in my world, Alan owned one of the greatest t-shirts of all time. He had this fantastic black t-shirt that had an outline of the state of Tennessee on it, and it said, "In a perfect world, Steve Earle would rule Nashville." And we used to threaten to beat him up and steal it from him all the time, and he claimed he had gotten it at a Steve Earle show when he was 9 years old or some crazy thing. But specifically, Alan would kind of hang out at a lot of Wade's gigs, and so Wade would be wandering around the brewery, and then he'd get his gear together and set up, and he'd start doing his mic check. Alan Sorsby, check 1, 2, Alan Sorsby. And invariably, Alan was somewhere in the building and would just scream out, "What? Why are you bothering me?" So check 1, 2, Alan Sorsby. Alan Sorsby became a regular mic check for almost everybody in Lubbock.
It's become kind of a legacy thing.
Yeah,
like, we all do it now. I never knew Alan Sorsby, and I've said it plenty.
He's gone on to – it's sort of like Rudy, who we've talked about before. Thousands of people around the world know Rudy Alanese, but they don't know – now I know Alan Sorsby.
I do a great Rudy impression. Never met the man.
Never met the guy. All right, let's get into the show. Thank you for that, Jeff. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Jeff, it turns out.
This is
Somebody Likes It. All right, welcome to Somebody Likes It, Shane, Kevin, Ryan, with our special guest, Jeff, this week. And we're going to talk about an album that I picked, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Very special album.
It is a very
a very special edition of Somebody Likes It.
And we'll all, lest you've gotten 4 minutes into this podcast, just know that you're going to learn some lessons.
You're going to learn something. Teach you. There's going to be a rainbow with stars at the end of it.
It's funny that you're saying
that. The more
you
know, Ryan.
As I listen to this record, I have a starred note that says very special album, like in a very special episode
totally.
Way. Yeah. So, but before, so, you know, we've been talking the last couple of weeks. We're varying up the way the show is set up and trying to do a few things. And I like the idea of in the beginning here, pausing a question or talking about some current events in music. And today I just want to talk briefly about something that's current in my life. And that is that I just heard a new song by Matchbox 20 at the gym.
And they exist?
That was my first thought that, yeah, they're still here. My second thought was, of course, the place you're going to hear a shitty band like that is the fucking gym.
It's the gym.
Because it just gives you the impetus to like work out as hard as you can. So when you hit them,
get
it really
hurts. Get
the
fuck away from it.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's normally what I would think, but I was changing. And here's the actual shocking thing, and most of you guys don't know my feelings on Matchbox 20, but I find them to be one of the more odious, boring bands of the last ever.
Odiously last
ever.
Boring,
of
yes.
the last ever.
Yeah.
Certainly.
But I was changing clothes, and I was like, I don't like this song, but man, they finally wrote a hook. It's the best thing I've ever heard by them. And I know that's damning with faint praise, but it was pretty good.
Is it worthy of like Matchbox 23? Or, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, I'd like put a little one half in there.
Sure.
And then right after that, I'm still in the afterglow, like all is well in the world, because if I feel good about Matchbox 20, then
here's the thing. So Linkin Park sucks. We can all agree on that, right?
Sure.
But they put out a record a few years ago that didn't suck, and I was really confused.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't suck, you know, like their earlier shit did, and I didn't know what to do with it.
You were like, if you guys just would have released it as a side project under another
just
name.
Just call it something else.
Then I could categorize it. But now because it's just good and you are categorically
it's
not.
It's merely decent. But like,
I was going to say, I don't believe he's saying it was good.
Yeah,
I was
it,
just
didn't
saying it didn't
heinously
make him
suck.
Stab himself.
Yeah.
So I was really confused. So you may be experiencing a similar reaction.
Well, I sort of thought, and you and I had this conversation many years ago about how it seemed like Matchbox 20 was music made by and for jocks, and you were correct. They
Certainly.
Were all like members of the football team. Like, but this song actually sounded like somebody had spent a little time working on their craft. Yeah. And then that was immediately followed by what I thought was a Nickelback song. But it wasn't, because now in my gym they have these videos.
Where are you
that
working
play?
Out?
No, I'm not going to give my – I know. Not, usually it's just like Katy Perry
it's
and
the local junior high. Going.
Yeah, usually
I was like, that gym sounds like a club I would never hit.
I don't – it's not that I sit around listening to their music. Anyway, but I thought it was a Nickelback song, and it was so bad. But I had it – because no matter how bad Nickelback songs are – they're so fucking pervasive. You still know them when you hear them. And I hadn't heard this yet. And I was like, did Nickelback put out a record? And I peeked my head around the corner to see the video on the monitor. And it's a new band. I can't remember the name of the band. Thank God. I think I blocked it out. That is obviously incredibly influenced by Nickelback. And I want to ask the
Dime
question.
Like, is that the lowest rung of the musical ladder influenced by Nickelback?
Are we back to busking outside the dollar store?
Is that maybe. Like, this might be just a notch below that.
How limited is your musical experience got to be where that's where you latch onto is fucking Nickelback?
Yeah,
well, I'm going to make you guys listen to a Nickelback record in a few weeks too.
I know, but I do think that there's a difference between songs being pervasive and understanding that that song is just like a now it's an earworm and you can't get it out of your head. There's one thing to make that leap, right? Because it's just being jammed down your throat. But the other thing is, it's another thing altogether to be inspired by that music and mimic it. Professionally,
it's mimicry. It could have been the same. I thought it was the same band, but I'm gonna do a lateral step here, Kevin, because was a really good setup for today's
album. Got a segue
album.
Coming here.
Yeah,
I'm gonna take control.
Talking. Whoa!
This pivot brought to you by
Speaking of pervasive earworms, so I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago how I thought that, that women had been underrepresented in our podcast, and I wanted to pick my next song pick and album pick, and hopefully it'll be more balanced in the future. I had originally picked Voices by Fanagram, but then I heard
there are women in Fanagram.
There are.
Yes, there is a woman in Fanagram.
Shane did a pivot.
I did a pivot because I was at the gas station getting gas right after this podcast on my way home, and playing over the gas station loudspeakers was Nasty Boys, or I believe Nasty, by Janet Jackson. So I immediately ran home and listened to that song and thought that would be a great album to talk about.
Not a great album.
No. A great album to discuss.
Great album to discuss.
Anybody else think it's weird that Shane was putting gas in his car and then he just got out and ran home? Like,
I got so excited about hearing
that. He's not very efficient.
Hey, Shane, where's your car? Oh, crap.
Oh, yeah. And like halfway through, I'm like, gotta get home. Listen now.
Anyway, yeah. Now you're totally spot on. These are, they were certainly pervasive in their time. Like, how many number one singles, Ryan?
Oh, I don't know how many number one singles, but there were
five.
Yeah, six singles spawned from this record, and five hit the top five.
And is spawned the right word?
Well, whatever. Maybe farted out.
I think Ryan is the most underwhelmed by this album of the three of us. We haven't discussed this.
There's going to be some vitriol from that side of the room, I think.
He's definitely made disparaging comments before. So, Ryan, why don't you tell us how you feel about Control by Janet Jackson?
Well, I'll just tell you this. Buddy of mine, who he and I have pretty similar taste in music. There's a band or two that we don't agree on, but we're pretty similar taste in music. I was giving him a ride home last night from work, and I was like, man, I got to listen to this Janet Jackson record. He's like, oh, right now? I was like, well, sometime between now and tomorrow. He's like, all right, man. You know, I'm giving him a ride home. He can't really complain. So we get through about five songs, and I was like, man, this music's making me sleepy. And he was like, dude, I was thinking the exact same thing.
I might be dying.
I literally got home and took a nap as soon as I got in. It's just really, really 1986.
It is of the period.
Very much.
This album is a Batman and shirt and cowboy boots.
Yeah, exactly.
Those of you that what was that band's
Flesh for Lulu. Lulu. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, hey, I'm sorry. Go
you're
on.
Right though. It is of its era.
It's just really, really dated.
It's the most dated of anything we've listened to so far.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. It's actually beating out Bon Jovi for that mantle.
Yeah, what we've got with Bon Jovi, as dated as it is, I can imagine people going and listening to Living on a Prayer, or if it came – like, I literally cannot imagine anybody ever putting on this album and listening to it even in a nostalgic way.
Yeah, no.
And what is it, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis? Were those the producers?
Yes. Yeah.
They said that they wanted to make the quintessential – black. They wanted this album to be in every black living room in America, and it probably was.
Sure,
yeah. But I can't imagine it being in anybody's living room anytime.
Well, and we'll probably have to tie it back. I mean, she's a Jackson, but lots of Michael's early stuff, and frankly, Jackson 5. I love Jackson 5.
But that's a lot of that shit is timeless music.
Absolutely timeless, and this is timed. This is of its time. It's that year.
That kitchen timer went off 25 years ago. Every single song, almost every single song. We'll get to that in a little while. But what was really striking to me was there is very little variations stylistically. It's all mid tempo, upbeat, keyboards, drum machine.
Well, I don't think she wrote a note of it other than the lyrics.
But that doesn't. Frank Sinatra never wrote any.
Yeah, that's
song.
True. That happens, but.
And some of the stuff that I read said that a lot of this music was actually written for someone else first.
Sharon something?
Yeah, and she – Sharon something, that's exactly what it was. And she got sort of in the studio with
Tate?
These guys and they –
It's not Sharon Tate.
And they let her kind of take control of sort of reworking a lot of the lyrics. And I mean, I'm certain that's going to be part of the conversation when we get to it song by song about how sort of autobiographical it was. And so it's clearly Janet's record to a certain degree, but – Yeah, it sounds like it's made out of a box. Like there's no
variation. I mean, yeah. And there, it's very very those sounds, those keyboard sounds are very specific to a very brief window in time. I mean, it's super slick, but it doesn't sound good.
Does it sound well?
No, it doesn't. It's not a good sound.
It's like you just let that hang there for a while. It's like with a thud. Like, you know,
don't sound good, oh, man.
It's not good.
And it doesn't sound good.
And it doesn't. It's not. No. But I have way fewer issues with this one than Ryan for sure. But there's some things that definitely stuck out that are very interesting to me. Very, very odd choices. One of which is that the album is 9 songs long and over 40 minutes. I mean, most of the songs for like a dance pop oriented record, I mean, several of these songs are over 4.5 minutes long and 5 over 5 minutes long. Instead of 2 to 3 minutes longer than you would normally think. And these guys, it makes no sense. It's a really odd choice.
Yeah.
Some of that is padded by her crazy talk in the title and track
Control.
Well,
I think that was a definite choice to try to mimic like the Prince template. You know, so Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis were from the time of Morris Day and the Time, very much,
and of the time,
and of the time.
And I think this record was actually recorded in Minnesota.
Yes, in real time.
In real time, back then.
Sorry.
Anyway, the record opens with this sort of like, oh look, we'll just try this, purple. What is it?
Rain.
Thank you, Jeff.
That's really why I'm here. I'm just the fact checker.
Yeah.
I get that. You're right, and it immediately brings that to mind. But it also is sort of it's her declaration, because if anything else, like, she's establishing her control over her career and her life. She'd recently had a divorce. She's distancing herself.
And I do appreciate that. If the music didn't suck so much, I'd really appreciate it more.
I don't even think it sucks as much. You know what I feel like it whenever, like, if you have a dog and your dog,
I have a dog.
Hears it. Lots of people have dogs, Kevin. Sorry. Not related to this.
Shane has two dogs.
I do have two dogs. And anyway,
Shane wins.
So cool your jets and let me say what I'm trying to say, man. Son.
I have a dog.
Thank you, Jeff.
Not have a dog.
Ryan, if you have a dog and if you see a dog respond to an odd noise and they cock their head, that's sort of how I feel about a lot of these songs. Like, they're not necessarily distasteful to me. I'm just – those are questionable –
they're curious.
They're curious. They're quite curious noises that are coming from the speakers. And you know what? Before we go any further, let's set it up and let's play Control. Let's play a little bit of Control.
Okay, here we go. This is Control.
So that was Control, which is a song.
It's the title song on Janet Jackson's
Tonight,
Control.
In a very special, super literal episode of Somebody
There
Likes
Were
It.
Words and Notes. And
So there. And before we talk about that song, there are a couple of things that I wanted to mention that just occurred to me. One is, and this is sort of appropriate of nothing and maybe won't be interesting to everybody, so it's a perfect setup for this show.
I was going to say, you're encapsulating everything we do right there.
Raising the bar pretty high, yeah.
Exactly. So now if I could just stretch this for another 40 minutes. One thing that I thought was interesting was that Janet Jackson's producer, like new producer for this record at the time, like the guy who just started working with her.
Terry Lewis.
Well, no, actually, I guess maybe this
she
is
had her new manager.
Her manager. That's who it was.
She and dumped again, her dad in favor of a new manager.
Well, right.
This and, is one and of my favorite parts of
anyway,
the record, too.
The point being is, like, the guy's name is John McClane, which also happens to be the...
Die Hard.
Yeah, this was 2 years before the Nakatomi incident.
It's also that guy, and it also is a portly sports reporter for the Houston Chronicle that covers the Houston Texans. And so all I can think of is that Janet Jackson is working with either a young Bruce Willis or this really round guy that says folksy things.
Like, why can't that be the same person?
Actually,
I think it should be.
This is
just, be a different movie.
When I read that earlier about John McClane, I misread it, and I read John McCain, the dude that ran for president.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
And so that's all.
That would also be a
all
different movie.
In my head.
See, now you got your Hank Williams ire up, and here we go.
Yeah. No. He just can't lift his arms up higher than his shoulders because of being in the prison camps.
Yeah.
So he couldn't, you know, he can't, like, I could just imagine him on the dance floor, like, dancing like Frankenstein.
Yeah. Shane is making Frankenstein moves as we speak here at the table. The other thing that I remember, and this is just curious to me, and I didn't do enough research to confirm or deny it, but I, a couple of years ago, visited Michael Jackson's childhood home in Gary, Indiana.
As we all have.
Have you? Like,
I did live in Indiana, so that would.
I mean,
make
and
sense.
It's in
had
between
I,
Fort yeah. Wayne and Chicago.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
But and it is dangerous as shit, y'all. Like it is.
Oh, Gary, Indiana is a fucking bad town.
No,
it is.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's got like the lightest jokesy name, like Gary,
oh,
Indiana.
Gary. Yeah. No, it's
it
not.
It is dicey.
It's the Bronx.
It's the city equivalent of that old Bill Hicks joke where he was talking about like the hooligans and the Crips and the Bloods.
Uh-huh.
Like Gary, Indiana sounds like the hooligans from the UK with the little hobbity name, and it is the Crips and the Bloods.
Exactly.
Like it is scary as shit in Gary, Indiana. But anyway, I visited
it
his
was
childhood.
The murder capital of the world or the
serious?
US for a while.
Yeah, it's totally
yeah.
true.
Yeah, it's a yeah. super sketchy
and
place.
So, that's so bizarre. Gary, by the way, is a really good name for a kitten. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Gary? I was going to say Gary. Indiana.
It was the name for a horse on an episode of Taxi.
Gary.
It was it?
It was.
That's some random
I swear
shit. That
hand
you know.
To God, man.
Oh, I believe.
Any road. So there were a couple of things that struck me about that house. One is it's teeny tiny. Like it's barely bigger than this garage. And there were like, I don't know, how many Jacksons were there? At least five.
Well, we know there were more than five.
At any given time, there were more
well,
than
we,
five.
Well, we got Janet, Reba, and what's the slutty one?
Polanski, Jackson.
LaToya.
Polanski? Janet, Reba, and Polanski?
Polanski, yes.
I just imagine like in a family photo, they're all lined up, and like one guy, one like tall Polish guy in the middle.
John, Paul, George, Albert, Goldman, and Ringo.
Anyway, instead of repurposing old SNL bits, the thing that struck me upon seeing that place, and this is what I was wondering about this record, is that like no wonder all of like they went out on the road, like they had to get out of the house. That house was so tiny, and so I don't know if she was because she was younger, she was the youngest. I don't know if she ever lived in that home, but I wonder if the impression that I have always had of the Jacksons to a certain extent is after they emerged from Gary and moved to the, you know, had their
well,
Beverly Hills style moment,
yeah.
then, you know, maybe they live like the nouveau riche. Like, I don't know. I honestly don't know. And I don't know if she ever experienced that sketchy city, and
tiny child.
Yeah, she probably did, but not necessarily in a way that it would ever cross her mind that it was a very frightening, and perhaps it was not a very frightening place.
Like, okay,
time.
So the Jackson 5, they probably hit around like 70, 71.
Oh, way before that.
Was it way before that?
Yeah, so they were like the Jacksons by that point.
So I took us off course, and I want to make sure that I steer us back to commenting
on
Control.
Oh, yeah, this record.
Because you got to have control, and
yeah.
I don't know what observations.
Jeff, what did you think about it?
I'm going to be the only person here who has positive things to say about this record.
Well, then please speak
to it.
Which I haven't listened to, and as you say, it's so incredibly dated. It's not something that you pull out and say, "Oh yeah, haven't had me some Janet in a while." I'm gonna get this happening, but. So you guys said, "Hey, you know, join us in this thing." I pulled down the record on the old iTunes. I spent money on it. So that was something.
Oh, you're so really good.
I know. Yeah.
Finally, I know. Janet Jackson can eat.
Yes, because it's only certified platinum about 185 times over.
At so some point, we have to talk about Boobgate. But
I was pleased that it only cost $8 and not 10.
I have
12.
A story about that too.
Hey, yeah. Can you shut up while Jeff is telling us?
Yeah, I'm telling the story. Go ahead.
And, no, what I was thinking about the record, other than the very first track, the control track that we just heard, immediately reminded me of a handful of different sequences for Beverly Hills Cop, which was which preceded it by a couple years, and how incredibly dated it was, how much it was of the era.
Wait, hold on. I am going to interrupt you. Ryan just looked at me because I just admonished Kevin for cutting you off as I'm doing now, but Ryan looked at me. And took it off the mic. He just mouthed to me, "It does."
No, it sounds
you just
like
blew his fucking mind.
It sounds exactly like that.
Beverly Hills Cop like ambient music.
It does. It sounds like the background music. I just imagine Eddie Murphy walking across the street in that shitty
Lion's
like hoodie
jacket.
That he was wearing. Yeah. Well, the Lion's jacket was the second one where they cleaned him up. But
I don't know.
Yeah, why I know that I don't know, but. But the other thing that I found as I was listening to this record over and over and over again, and I have a theory, I think, of why this is true, that I know you guys all hated it. I thought this record was fucking sexy. Like, ooh. I've had half a Rodney all day long. I don't know why. And it's possibly because this record came out when I was 12. And I've just regressed into my 12-year-old self where there's this girl telling me, oh, no, we really shouldn't fool around. But it's this slow, sultry beat, and it's very sort of Prince-like, who's super sexy.
Man, I respect that, but I'm so profoundly disturbed right now.
It is a little disturbing.
It was disturbing to me. I'm not certain why, out of nowhere, Janet Jackson control turned me on as much as it
perhaps
did.
Perhaps you should exercise some control.
Perhaps. Some self-control.
I'm just going to assume that he didn't, but that's why it's so disturbing.
And that's yeah, that was my weird initial impression, is that, like, I don't remember if I did listen to this while I was making out with my junior high girlfriend, but it would have been the appropriate time period kind of thing happened.
Go ahead, Kevin. I was just going to say, and I don't remember which track this is, but I appreciate the fact that there is, like, it really feels of its time when there's, like, the bullshit, like, high school girl dialogue at the beginning of at least one of the songs. Like, the idea is, like, they're just, it's all about.
Oh, that was on What Have You Done For Me.
That's what it is. Yes. Which was another of the top five singles. And
which
anyway.
Apparently was a diss to her. Newly annulled ex-husband.
DeBarge.
James DeBarge. Not L. DeBarge. The other DeBarge.
Oh, the minor DeBarge.
Lots of hangers-on from famous R&B families during this period of time, apparently.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. What's the... Shane, do you want to spin one?
I do, and then it's gonna.
Well, we have to go to Nasty at some point.
No, that's a song that I do want to play. That started this whole thing, but the reason is, and bear with me for a second. I've got to explain this in the proper way. Jeff just now talking about having something going on down there while he was listening to this album and remembering being in junior high. The first time that I ever became aware of Janet Jackson was when I was in fifth grade. And the three hottest girls in my junior high I don't know who there were others. There were some other people, but I remember these girls very specifically, and I will not name their names now because I don't want them to know how I was looking at them back then when I was 12. But they were.
And I'm sure they're going to be listening to this podcast.
Oh, yes. I know. It's very popular on the circuit.
And that they have no idea
of girls that are
Tybee
still
in
school.
Tybee High.
No.
They're part of that Facebook group, Girls Shane Knew When He Was 12.
Yeah.
Girls that Shane surreptitiously checked out when he was 12.
Right, exactly. It's really hard to get into.
But they came up with all these routines, like these like dance. You know, like later in high school, you would have like the. I don't know. They were different in every school. Like the dancer. There's like the cheerleaders, and then there's like the dance team. And these are like proto dance team moves. And the first time that I ever heard the song "Nasty" was them singing the song and doing the dance moves and coming up with their routines. And I had much of the same reaction that Jeff had now, 25 years later. When back
getting
then,
a half chubby.
Oh, no, I'm not gonna say half. I mean, come on, let's be honest. I'm not going to diminish that. Anyway, okay, so let's listen to "Nasty" by Janet Jackson.
All right.
Sitting in the movie show, thinking best advice. I don't think it'll ever change.
Yes, and that was nasty. Hey, before we go any further with this, I want to. This is a little disclaimer. I thought about it while we were listening to the song, and I was saying that the three hottest girls and some other unimportant people set up the dance routine. I didn't mean to imply that there were two guys.
That only hot women set up dance routines.
I was one of the.
You were a Laker girl.
Well, no. I really was a Laker girl.
Shane was a Laker person.
Well, yeah. I heard the song and they were dancing and setting up this thing and like this, I was very in love with Adrian Hill, and
I thought we weren't naming names.
But no, but you're
only
right.
Only one.
The only one. Yeah. There are some other ones, and I was invited to join a little bit on the playground. Because we're still on the playground at this point, by the way, guys.
Sure.
How old are you? Like 17?
25?
Close. Yeah, maybe 24.
And how old was Adrian Hill?
At the time?
13 or 14, maybe?
Yeah, like 13. Yeah.
12.
Yeah.
35?
Okay, so anyway, let's go ahead and get out of this. We're going to take our intermission. And today, for a few minutes with Ryan, picked a song. And Ryan, you want to tell us what we're listening to?
We're going to listen to some When in Rome. Which can only mean one song.
And it is the one song.
Promise.
Okay, let's do that. Here it is, When in Rome, a few minutes.
Promise.
Welcome to A Few Minutes With, and Ryan, I believe this was your week to choose the song that we're going to spend some special time with.
It was a very special time with When in Rome, who are known for exactly one song. But evidently, members of this band have made a career out of that one song. But anyway, the song is The Promise.
And I do feel like there's a very familiar aesthetic, maybe to a greater degree with this song than the Flesh for Lulu track that we did a few weeks ago, that is like just riding the crest of the 80s.
This definitely rode some sort of crest. I don't know if it was 80s or what have you, but Shane's chomping at the bit. What?
I think it's a decent song, but I know someone in this room that does not, and that's our special guest tonight, Jeff Ryder. And I want to see what Jeff has to say about this song.
I hate this fucking song.
What vitriol?
What? There is extreme vitriol, and unfortunately, it's connected to personal background story or whatever.
Let's hear it.
We make this as brief as possible. One thing that you guys know about me that the people who listen to the podcast don't, or I don't know, maybe they do, is that I spent a few years living here in Austin running a piano bar. A place called the Ivory Cat Tavern on 6th Street. And this song was...
Of course you hate this song.
This song was quite popular in the request. It's sort of piano-based, and it's got a great spot where the drummer can drop right in with the lyric that Ryan is really a fan of doing.
Promise.
There you go. And so every night for about 6 years, I heard a really shitty piano cover of this song at least once, sometimes more than once a night. It was surprisingly high up there with the Margaritaville and the Brown Eyed Girl requests.
And Piano Man.
And every Elton John song you've ever heard of. And it kind of makes me want to stab my eyeballs out.
Well, and we won't go too far down this path, but I do occasionally like to
I don't
tell.
Think we should go anywhere down this path.
Now, well, you'll see what I mean. But one thing that I remember about Jeff managing that bar was that he went through a period where he was just like, okay, I'm going to go the opposite direction than openly hating all these songs. And he went out and he bought all of the originals to the shit that they play all the time. He's like, I want to figure out why it is that people like this in the first place.
It was specifically Billy Joel. I grabbed like the two big mega collections of every Billy Joel song ever. And for about 3 months, I was in love with Billy Joel again. And I was like, oh, yeah, these are fantastic pop songs.
Yeah.
These are wonderfully crafted little ditties. These are, no wonder everyone on the planet loves this song. That lasted literally about 2 or 3 months, and then I was back to hating myself and my life.
And then it's worse because you don't have that club in your bag anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, Ryan, you touched on the thing that sort of meant the most to you, air quotes, about this song, or the thing that you stick with whenever you hear it.
Well, okay, every time I hear it, I just hear "Promise."
And I
which comes up, I don't know, dozen and a half times in the song, "Promise."
is it like, and that's kind of a thing for you, like, is it the R.E.M. bit and the Van Halen bit and like, it's sort of that little separator?
I don't know, like, man, but like, once you hear it and you just hear that separated from the rest of the song, like, I can't unhear that. Like,
well, but you're singing. See, we were talking about this last week, and I don't know if you were saying this on the air or not, but you would pick this song, and then when at some point you were like, you just kept singing "Promise," but now you're singing it like they're singing it on the recording. Before, you were doing it like Goober Pyle, like "Promise, Promise,
Promise,
Promise."
Who is Goober Pyle?
He's Gomer Pyle's cousin.
Gomer Pyle
ran the gas station.
Try to keep
is
up.
Is that true?
Gomer Pyle is true.
Less sophisticated relative, Kevin.
Yeah. Come on, get your Mayberry
and
history
I'm the one
straight.
That sucks because I don't know that.
Yes, you are.
In any case, I actually do think it's a good pop song, and it was like huge among my band geek friends when I was a junior in high school. Like, it was, and I do think it's a good song, but like, just for whatever reason, that little "Promise," like, just always sticks
now
out.
Now I'm only going to hear it in your voice.
I know.
But I did do a little
"Promise."
Yeah, "Promise." But I did do a little research, in anticipation of this, and it turns out that they're now like split factions of "When in Rome." All it takes is one hit, and you basically have a career for the rest of your life.
They have a nostalgia circuit.
Yeah. So one of them has to bill themselves as Clive Farrington and Andrew Mann, formerly of "When in Rome."
Wow.
That's a long URL.
Yeah, it really is. .com.
Because at one point I saw a reference to them referred to as "When in Rome, UK," which I thought was sort of entertaining.
There's that. There's a whole, like,
seeing as how they're from the UK.
But they were always "When in Rome, UK." I don't understand why we needed to.
One of the things that I think about this song, and I think the song is great. I have very fond memories of me and my best friend Nathan Kennedy running around in high school singing the song together. Even aside from that, I think it's a good pop song. And I'm just gonna throw this little curveball into this discussion. Here's the difference between a lot of the songs on Control, which we'll go back to in a few minutes. And don't act like we weren't talking about something else before this.
Oh, sure.
And this song is that nobody can bust out an acoustic guitar and around a campfire and sing "What Have You Done For Me Lately." And I think that's unless it's going to be a joke, I think that's a hallmark of a good, even like great R&B songs. You can do R&B, you can do "What's Going
Sure.
On" in that way. You can't with those songs, but this song you can. And when why this came up in my mind, I think this is why we were talking about this last week, is that there's an album that came out recently by a country singer named Sturgill Simpson, who we will be discussing on this show in a couple of weeks. And he has a country album about LSD and psilocybin and lizard aliens. And but he does a couple.
Like most of them are.
I'm really disappointed I'm not going to be here for this.
Oh, it's actually amazing.
Tune in.
It sounds so much more comical than it is. Don't get me wrong. It is comical to some degree, but it's a great record. But he does a cover of this song. And in a forlorn country version, and it's so much. There's so much more to it in that verse. Like, I remember hearing Grateful Dead songs. I can't stand the Grateful Dead, but I've heard some of their songs covered by other people that sound great. Like, a good song is a good song.
One thing that we haven't talked about is we did what we usually try to do with these intermission tracks, and we watched the video. And just a question I'll pose to you guys. is there any more quintessential 80s video shot than the one guy sings into the camera while the other guy sings sideways? Like, you get his one guy's profile while the other guy looks straight at you.
I was going to say sideways. Like, you're talking about the sideways stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, holy shit. And it was everywhere for a little while like
that.
Well,
and those two guys look kind of similar to me, so it was very confusing because one of them has hair. One guy's got, like, Michael Hutchins in excess mid-80s
like, glorious hair.
Glorious mane of hair. Yeah. And one guy's got completely shaved, nothing hair. And I was like, is this something I'm supposed to be reading into this video? That's the same guy with a wig, a lot of subtext that they were going for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the hair to the Christ figure.
I just thought it was interesting that, like, if you watch that video all the way through, the guy who doesn't have the Michael Hutchins locks, he's like, he's got no hat, then he's got a hat, then the hat is just gone. So, like, you know, he's just – that guy has to make choices. The other guy's just let it flow. Let it flow, man.
He whips his hair back and forth quite a lot.
He does. A whole lot. Yeah.
All right, guys, let's get back to the
let's get back into the main deal here.
Okay, we've got some more Janet Jackson coming up next.
Why don't you play a clip from – why don't you play The Promise?
Okay, we'll play some Promise, and then on the other side of that, we'll get back into Janet. So that was The Promise, Ryan.
Promise.
Thank you. and now we've had our text alert noise. Yet another song from the 1980s. One thing that, before we get it back into the Janet stuff, it occurred to me that there is one story that's specifically about Janet Jackson. That's not specifically about this record, but one of you guys mentioned, maybe it was Shane, maybe it was Ryan, one of you guys mentioned, well, we got to talk about the nip slip situation in the Super Bowl.
Boobgate.
Yeah, that was Ryan.
So this is totally true. So one of my dear friends, his brother is
Justin Timberlake?
No. His brother works at is a camera guy for a lot of big shows. He's worked on Big Brother for years and has done some of these award shows. And there is a Janet Cam that's now, and that's what it's called.
The Janet Cam?
The Janet Cam. And what that is that they have one camera that's just, like, pointed at, like, curtains or, like, something that's totally safe, but, you know,
the 50-foot-tall golden man or whatever it is.
Yeah, so if somebody's boobles are hanging out,
they could just cut to that.
They could just dump to the Janet Cam.
It's called the Janet Cam forever.
Like, there's one guy, there's a guy who has to sit there and look at the curtains all Oscars long or whatever.
Here's the thing that puzzles me about that whole episode. She had on a pasty. Like, they call it, like, Nipplegate, and I call it Boobgate, whatever. But like, it wasn't actually her whole breast.
Yeah.
Like, she had on a pasty.
So you're saying she knew it was going to happen?
Well, I kind of think so.
You're blowing my fucking mind, Ryan.
And I have a really great theory
on
that.
What, an aging, fading pop star stages some sort of thing at the Super Bowl where her titty pops out?
I'll tell you what, man.
Her titty pops out? That's insane.
What was your theory?
I call it my Building 7 theory of boobs.
Of boobs.
Hefe, what was your theory?
And that was the thing. Like, it's obviously very much more likely that it was clearly staged, but at the very least, and it was sun-shaped, right? It was like a star thing.
It was very specific, like
her nipple was briefly a member of KISS. But almost as if, like, well, he's going to grab my shirt and yank on it, and the boob might come out. So maybe we should put this thing on here in case the boob does
come. Oh, come on.
That's, or they totally, yeah, no. That's,
and I was with I like you guys and not Shane when this happened. Like we were
That's right. This Houston Super Bowl.
Yeah, we were at some idiotic sports bar. Yeah.
I still have never
but
seen
it. We TiVo'd it. We went back and watched it like a dozen times.
We did.
Ryan, I'm sure watching Ryan right now. Like he's being so cavalier with his microphone. It reminds me of like if you're hearing stories by like a great like we've talked about it before and I can never remember his last name.
Chamberlain?
Sure.
Sorry.
We can just say that that'll be his code name.
Yeah.
No, Robert Ryan's just being cavalier as he tells the stories. And the mic is just – I can't wait to listen back to this because I'm watching his mic go all over in this haphazard fashion right now. Anyway.
He's the Richard Lewis of this podcast.
Yeah.
I never saw any of that stuff before, but I did love the term that was attributed – or it was – that was given to it almost immediately, wardrobe malfunction. That is some that right there is some ad people working overtime.
Well, and it's here's the
damage control
thing. It's worked its way PR. Into the lexicon, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's like not something if you hear somebody say that there was a wardrobe malfunction, A, it's always tongue in cheek, and B, no one's surprised when they hear that term. Here it is, you know, whatever, 10 years later.
It was dead on arrival. It was immediately hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah,
no. It was the ultimate like political obfuscation kind of thing. Like saying something that you have to address it in some way, but you don't want to address it in any way where there's sharp edges at all.
Well, there's more of this record. I wanted to bring that up because I think the Janet game is such.
Oh,
a
Oh wait, what?
Jeff.
Wait, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Like I think when did I say sharp edges? Is that what set you off?
Sharp edges in reference to Janet Jackson's boob is the part that's making me laugh. Like
oh no, it's the exact opposite of sharp edges. If we're talking about Janet Jackson's boob.
Well, the thing looks sharp. It's like a ninja star. Like that would be some bad shit. And if you got into that bubble.
Well, if it was made of metal.
It appeared to me when I saw it that it was. That's my point. That it was some sort of jewelry. That it was an adornment.
That she was bejeweled?
That she was bejeweled, yes.
Yeah.
Let's
get away.
That would hurt. Let's get way away from
moving
that.
On.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot more of this record out here, and we haven't even covered all of the top five songs.
Well, I want to go, if we're going to talk.
There were a great many.
Say five? Yeah, five top five. The song that I.
They were Jackson top five.
God, what?
Lovely.
Why are you not in some like dimly lit lounge?
Shit, doing my shitty stand-up act. Yeah,
doing your shitty stand-up act.
That happens tomorrow.
Okay, go. Well, I'll make sure to be there.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I will be there.
You will be there.
Anyway, no, there. And the other thing that I, and this is like sort of a weird abstract thought that I've had, but I wonder if like, okay, so it's a, there are only nine songs on this record, and there were five of them that were top five.
Thank God. Nine songs on this record.
No, seriously.
Five long songs.
It was kind of bullshit.
That's the only thing that justifies it, though. At that time, records had 10 songs, five on each side, because back then, records still had sides.
Sure.
And to only get nine, like you'd feel a little gypped if they weren't all about 5 minutes
but
long.
Pop songs, like R&B songs, like Billie Jean, I'm not sure if, I'd be willing to bet that song is under 4 minutes long.
It's probably 3.5 minutes long.
Yeah, I mean, and
it's
so
a ditty.
Many,
you could call it a ditty.
A ditty?
Yeah.
Does ditty, is that defined by the length of?
I feel like ditty song? Has a like Stairway to Heaven's not a ditty.
No, there's a certain. No, but there's
I think
a certain
that,
lightness
it has more to do with
the
melody than it does the
maybe,
length of a song.
Maybe. Anyway, here's my original point. What I wondered is like, okay, so there are nine songs in the tracker. There are five of them that were wildly popular, and then there are the other four. And I thought like, if these songs were like somehow like if it was a Toy Story type situation and they were sentient, if the five that were really popular were just dicks to the other four, like
that's my favorite Twilight Zone episode that hasn't been written yet.
Yeah, exactly.
So you need to get on that.
I'm confused right now.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm not even drunk.
Well, like,
I just think this way. What is that, America?
I don't know. Your chalice needs to be refilled. So.
I know. I'm gonna have to work on firing up a chalice, but. I know that there are some other we've talked about.
I have.
We've talked about Nasty. We've talked about Control.
This is your record, so yeah.
Why can't I
take us down the path?
We have not talked about You Can Be Mine, which my note for You Can Be Mine is one word: wow. It's 5 minutes and 16 seconds long. That's fucking Stairway to Heaven type shit. And it's the first song, I believe, in the first four or five songs on the record that isn't a single. And it's bad. Really, really bad. And
Does it feel like it was just sort of left behind and they're like, okay, well, the studio said, or the whatever, the label says, we have to put one more song on here, so let's put this shitty song on here.
Well, yeah, because we sure can't have like only eight songs. They gave her, like, it's as though, like, when Paul and George when John and Paul gave George the song, the one song in the record, except George always came through
right. And
had a great song. Well, they gave Janet this one song. And she didn't really. And why don't we play that? You Can Be Mine. And we'll talk about it after that.
Okay, here it is. You Can Be Mine.
You Can Be Mine. It sort of sounds like not only just a throwaway track, but also she had been watching a lot of Max Headroom at that point in the mid-80s.
I think that's totally possible. I think there seems to be a central conceit to the song, which has to do with who can be hers.
And you would be the person she's...
Oh, sure.
You specifically, Kevin.
And maybe that's the reason that Jeff had such a fondness for this song, is that she spoke directly to him part of the record.
I so have nothing to say about this song because it's so goddamn forgettable. Like, we just listened to it, and I don't remember dick.
I almost want to, like, make Kevin to turn it off and then play it for Ryan again.
I'll just forget it again.
I was trying to do like a version of the robot, by the way. Kevin was out of the room and I was doing like a version of the robot. And Ryan was so nonplussed by it. He wasn't having any of it. He was completely not reacting to anything he was doing. He's just off somewhere in Shangri-La in Ryan Town.
Well, and I don't know what address that is, by the way. But
666 Devilville. But,
yeah, there you go. Giving us the Beavis move. Yeah. But anyway, I do think that, frankly, Shane, I'll give you a little props. I think it's savvy that you shared one of the lesser songs from this record. And, I don't know. Like,
it had to happen. Well, I mean, when we all got together tonight, all four of us, and one of the first things out of the other one's mouth was, I can't believe how many top 10 top 5 singles were off this record. I mean, over half. I mean, stuff sure. That's just part of the popular. I mean, everybody in the entire world of our age group knows Mix Jackson If You're Nasty.
Mix Jackson If You're Nasty.
Well, and I do think that it's actually, so I would just like to, this is sort of a backhanded compliment at best, but like when you made Ryan and I listen to the Bon Jovi tracks, the upside to being able to, or to having to endure something like this is that you sort of already know them. Like, there are a lot of these songs that we sort of, I felt like, I was like, oh, yeah, I totally.
Well, I will say this, that is over the Bon Jovi record. What was the fucking Bon Jovi record, Shane?
Slipper When Wet. I think Ryan's about to fall asleep.
No, I'm good. I am going to take a nap after this. However, this record is better than that in that I don't want to fucking slit my wrists. When I listen to it, I just want to take a nap.
I know that I told both of you guys this, but I don't know that I told anyone else on any of the audience this, that we started earlier when we did the Bon Jovi Slippery We Know It episode. We started earlier and went just as long as we went just as late as we normally do. We did a episode that was twice as long because we had so much to say about it. We drank so much. I was so hungover when I woke up the next morning. I got in my car feeling like the world should end.
This song.
I turned the key, and the radio was playing Wanted Dead or Alive.
And you were like, mostly dead.
Mostly dead. But yes, the irony of Bon Jovi. Anyway, okay, right. No, I get it. I mean, it's not that shitty, but I mean, at least we have something to...
Well, and let me ask you guys this question. So was there a song in whatever like sort of relative scale that you put the songs on this record on, was there something that rose to the top for you?
There is the one song that I like, and forgive me for...
You said When I Think of You is a decent song.
Yeah, it kind of starts off, and like I remember something about the video of like a kid jump roping or something, and... like it's not a terrible song.
Well, and it's like, and it's up tempo and hopeful, and it's not like it doesn't sound like there's no like sort of juvenile prelude. Like,
well, it's not hit me over the head with this synthesizer scheme,
giant horn.
All I can see when I think of that song is the beginning of A Perfect World. Not A Perfect World. What was the spinoff of The Cosby Show that Lisa Bonet initially was
Different
in?
World.
Different World.
I think it was called Not the Cosby Show.
That was the working title.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it was like Dwayne Wayne, and he had like those like sunglasses that flipped
over. Yeah, before he started playing for the Miami Heat.
Yes,
that guy. You know,
I would so much love to see...
Wayne, okay, that's right. Yeah.
You know, Dwayne Wayne had some ups. He could dunk.
Yeah. Anyway,
that's when I think of you. Do you like that singing? It's pretty sweet. Speaking of, we haven't even discussed this, the elephant in the room right there. Janet Jackson's voice is incredibly thin. She's not a very good singer.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm indifferent in it. I'm very ambivalent about this album. I think it's decent. If you put yourself back in 1986, that's a damn good record. The songs, the hooks are there. It's so dated, but her and it sounds like a lot of the...
Is she double tracked a lot? I didn't even notice. Like I didn't even think about it.
I don't think she was. No, because it's so thin. They weren't spending a lot of time on the sound of her
voice. Kevin, I'm sure you looked at this. This record was like universally praised.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very well received. And in fact, that's what I was thinking when Shane was saying that. A lot of the criticism that I was reading was about the quality of Janet's voice and how amazing that she was growing up and becoming this full-throated singer or whatever. And
she was not full-throated.
No, not remotely. That's what I'm saying. I don't understand why that would be a praise for the record, because anyone who listens to it doesn't hear what those guys were saying.
Well, and the other thing is, if you look at sort of the grand, like sort of overarching state of reviews of her products that she's put out there, musically speaking, it's not particularly positive. Like this record in particular got a lot of love from the critics, but and clearly, obviously, people went out and bought it. But she has not. It's not. She hasn't had like a history
of
high fives.
She got a pass on this one.
Maybe you're right.
Like
maybe
they
so.
Put some muscle behind it, and she got a pass.
No, I mean you have to go back and put your. I mean, in my opinion, you have to put yourself in the time. I mean, the lyrics alternately pretty much deal with two themes: empowerment and boy troubles.
Sure,
but. The empowerment theme was one that really hadn't been. I mean, now it's trotted out a lot.
I actually think like the lyrical content is probably the best thing this record has going for it.
I agree with that.
Yeah,
like there ain't dick other than that.
No, there's some decent hooks, but it sounds so dated. It's impossible to listen to and put yourself in the moment of the song. You put yourself in the moment of the moment. 25 years ago, you don't put yourself in the moment of the song.
There's a Aziz Ansari bit where he talks about going into Diddy's house, and he walks in, and Diddy is like listening to his new unreleased record, like his own stuff that he just put together on his couch, and he's like,
"I think it was Kanye."
Oh, you know what? You're right. It was Kanye. For the conceit of the story, like it frankly doesn't really matter which one of those guys it is, but it was like, but of course it was Kanye. That makes sense.
No, it's very important to get the facts.
Anyway, thank you. Anyway, I forgot you're the fact checker.
That's me.
Anyway, but he walks in. He's like, "Are you listening to your own record?" And what I wonder is like now, like whatever, 30 years later. Do you think Janet Jackson ever even listens to this record?
Oh, hell no.
Yeah.
No. I'm going to disagree with that. There's no way if that woman does not, like, one of these nights have a bad day, drink a couple bottles of wine, and be like, yeah, I remember that being good. I'm going to put that in and listen to that.
But is it the Louis C.K. or whatever deal where he's like, dad's always dressed like the last year that they were cool? Like, I kind of feel like maybe there's a little bit of that going on. It's like, hey, does anybody remember when I was relevant? And you just put it on?
Does
she have a boombox that she carries around wistfully?
I mean, I can't say. One of these days, by the way, we've talked about this before. One of these days, we have to pick a subsequent album by one of these artists. We could pick, you know, Janet Jackson a few years down the line, or Fleetwood Mac a few years down the line, or you know, Hank Williams, fuck it, anybody. But
sure,
we've got to at some point take an album like 10 to 15 years later and then see what that person was thinking at that time and what we felt about their...
All I know is I want to take a flyer on Janet Jackson for a while.
Ryan's not of the Rhythm Nation.
I am not of the Rhythm Nation. Ryan is a breakaway republic
from the Rhythm
Nation.
Nation
is where she kind of starts getting it. Like,
that might be a better record. Man, I am tired of this one. And what I told my buddy last night when we were riding home, I was like, I'm going to listen to this record exactly once.
Yeah.
Well, you're about to listen to one more song on it because...
All right, let's do that and get it out of my life.
The song that I thought was going to be, and it is, granted, there is some silly, silly lyrical content to the song. But in my mind, the song that stands up the best... And that sounds, and partially it's because more than three quarters of this record is just mid tempo 1986 dial keyboard.
Ryan fell asleep in the podcast.
It's like
he just went face down.
Like we started a podcast, a library broke out.
You know, I can't wait until you fall asleep and I pull the chair out from under you, and we'll have some great laughs.
We have to remember Mike the Thud.
Yeah, that's the big part. A different sort.
Mike
for sure.
The Thud.
Yeah,
that sounds like some tough guy and Mike like a Dick Tracy.
Not Mike the Thug. Mike the Thug, the verb.
Dick Tracy cartoon.
So what's the last track that you want to play?
Let's Wait a While, which is a ridiculous song.
I thought you were saying, let's wait a while to do it.
let's drag this out for Ryan now.
Just a little bit longer.
You guys,
the Chinese water torture that
I'm
is
sorry if I didn't,
control.
I didn't say it in such a sultry... Let's wait a while.
Oh, this is the celibacy song.
This is the abstinence song.
And it's hilarious, but I'm telling you.
It is funny.
It's just Say No song. Very appropriately 80s.
But musically speaking, it is, in my mind, the most interesting song on the record. And I will make you guys listen to this in the break here. Just at least
make you is the operative term.
Right. Oh, I know. That's why I said make. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so here it is. Let us wait a while.
Let's wait a while before it's too late. Let's wait a while. Our love will be great. Let's wait a while before we go too far. Save some for later, so our love can be greater. You said you would always love me. Remember, I said the same thing to you.
So that was Let's Wait a While by Miss Janet Jackson, a song that Shane was really, really excited to hear. And I think more really, really excited to force Ryan to listen to one last time.
Holy Christ.
Can we talk about, like, real quick, and that was Mr. Jeff Ryder bringing us out of that song. So I think that needs to be acknowledged.
Oh, yeah. Jeff, thanks for sitting in today, man. This has been fun. And I do think that, like, Shane, to your credit, you've picked some of the tracks that I expected that you'd pick, and you've thrown us some curveballs. And so, I don't know, what were your... what was your take?
I do want to say before we talk about this real quick, like Ryan, we had a few weeks ago on Labor Day, we had a discussion about Ryan staying up all night partying a little bit and then showing up with a Slim Jim and
Ryan?
Slim Jim and some Chardonnay.
Last night.
It's like the upscale trucker's dining situation.
I think Ryan...
I'm all class.
We started recording tonight a little bit earlier than we normally do. In fact, I was just realizing how early it was, and I was, what am I going to do with myself? But Ryan was fully expecting to have taken a nap.
I didn't get my nap.
No.
So it was a thing. I have rallied.
You have rallied, but I can see the...
Promise.
I can...
Promise.
I promise we'll be over in a minute. So I just want to
yell.
Sorry, we're devolving into bits, but yeah, to Ryan, to your credit, like Ryan, thanks for hanging in there.
No, happy to do it. It was actually fun. It was not nearly as miserable as I thought it might be, except for the part where I had to listen to Janet Jackson's Control.
Oh well, which was all of it. But anyway, I mean, I guess it's just us talking about Control. Really, Ryan? I mean,
that song is fucking amusing, though, man. I'll say that. The one that we just played, what's it called? Let's Wait a While.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Control, because I was going to say that's proto Spice Girls, Girl Power.
No, Let's Wait a While is really NBC, like. The public service announcement circa 1986.
Yeah, very Nancy Reagan, just say no.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so my follow-up question...
also reminds me of my 12-year-old girlfriend.
My follow-up question with that in mind, speaking to Jeff's sort of way back machine that you were talking about a little while ago, when you heard Let's Wait a While, I mean, did that slow down your juju?
Like, no, that made it worse, because that's exactly what happened to me when I was 12. That was the unnamed girlfriend who lives right here in town.
I lost my virginity.
We tried to get her on the show, but no.
To the Jets, which would, to a song very similar to Let's Wait a While. So when I hear that, maybe that's why I like that song. Maybe that's why that's my favorite song on this album. Flashing back to another...
Because
it's a couple song about abstinence.
Yeah, because if you just look at the track names, I mean, there's a lot of sexy things going on here. Control, Nasty, The Pleasure Principle, You Can Be Mine, When I Think of You, and then there's, but Let's Wait a While. It's bringing you right to the edge and then backing off just a tiny bit.
Shane said three words, song about abstinence. How is that ever a good thing? How can that ever be a good song?
Well, the music is good. Again, you know, you guys always like to like turn the lens on me about lyrics, but
it's because
lyric dude.
You are consistent in that is important to you.
It is important to me, but it also gives us something to talk about in this situation. But in this song in particular, it's the best R&B, like straight up slow jam R&B song on this fucking record, and. On one hand, before I listened to the song, I was totally hung up on the lyrics because they are hilariously funny.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't hilarious denote funny? Why did I even? That's redundant.
Yeah,
it can't
be hilariously funny.
I don't know.
Yeah. And then, but also, once you listen to the song, and after you've listened to like the previous seven songs that are just like, you know, just mid tempo, dancey. mid-80s shit, and then all of a sudden you get to this song and it's like it slows down and it's got this like these like kind of jazz R&B chords and it's like Let's Wait a While, like yeah, okay, I settle into that, like I can sit down in my chair and fucking listen to this,
man. I'm just waiting to like pick up the LP Songs About Abstinence.
I guarantee
slow jams.
Hey, you know what, that dude that had that website where he was talking about Ronnie James Dio's soul has been dead for a long time.
Yeah,
I bet he sells those LPs because he's still into, well, I mean, actually now we've crossed over in this day and age where LPs are
they're retro now.
Yeah, what's an LP?
Yeah.
Well, they're much more important than CDs.
A long player.
Well, and they're a little bit of a status symbol in that they show that you're sort of, you know, quote serious unquote about what it is that you're listening to.
Yeah, because young people that are interested in aesthetics and interested in authenticity in some way, there's not a, well, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, there, and something we should expand upon in another episode, but I do think.
Did I just say young people?
You did.
Oh, because you are not
because
anymore.
Because none of us here are young people any longer.
Shane just turned 40.
Yeah.
We all did.
Not happy.
Actually, when you talk about
41, though.
No,
no, you're 40.
I'm not happy when you talk about stuff like that, Ryan.
Shut up.
You need to go take a fucking nap.
I just turned 40. It's all right.
It's whatever.
It's not what we're here to talk about.
Wait, how old are you again, Shane?
We're here to talk about Janet Jackson's Control.
We're here about, and specifically, and because there's a point that I want to get back to, and we'll wrangle.
Oh, Jeff,
as fast
you're
as possible.
You're taking up the fucking mantle at the end of the goddamn show.
Because Ryan keeps talking about how this is a song about abstinence, and it's not. Janet's not saying let's never have sex ever. She's saying
no. She's saying let's wait till marriage.
She doesn't necessarily say marriage. She just says a while. This is just like it's a quiet storm.
You come back.
It's a slow jam make out tune. Like that's what this is made to be. And it's let's make out. Let's fool around. There's maybe some heavy petting. Again, I'm channeling my 12-year-old me. And then you get right up to it. She's like no. Let's wait on that part a while. Not that it's not coming. There's every promise.
No pun intended.
There's every promise that there'll be some coming. Just not today, not tonight, baby. Like just a little while longer, Brian. Just hold off.
It's another
and it's that
movie night
of,
at the Jacksons.
And it's that it'll be so much better when we eventually get there. Is the promise of this song. Poorly rendered in the really bad lyrics that Shane thinks are hysterical. But essentially the theme is we're not going to do it tonight. But we're totally going to do it.
She's
a little bit less explicit.
I get his very rosy view of what's going to happen. I mean, by a while. The thing that
why don't you wait a while?
I just say that because we're on the same side of the table.
While Jeff was trying his best to sell that, which I'm pretty much buying, by the way, it reminded me of a story. In my early 20s, I had a large house party and lots of kegs in the backyard, and everybody had left, and my friend ended up in the back room of the house with another party goer, and she asked if he had a condom, and he didn't, and he said, hold on a second, I'll go get one. And I'm sitting in the living room. By the way, there are no other people in the house. I'm watching TV. He runs out of the bedroom in his boxer shorts with no shoes on and then runs. It was when I lived at Harris Park, Ryan. So the closest convenience store was about a half a mile away, maybe three quarters of a mile away. He ran down the street barefoot.
I'm really trying to figure out how you're going to direct this back to Janet Jackson, but knock yourself out.
Barefoot and in boxers, and he ran back. And I was like, when he ran out, I remember going like, what are you doing? He's like, back in a second. And then he ran out, and then what seems to me in my memory of being like approximately 1.5 minutes later, he was back, and he ran through the door with a box of condoms.
That he paid for with what? He didn't have his pants on.
I know. No, he had his wallet in his hand. I forgot to tell you about that. He had a wallet.
He paid for it with his penis.
No, he had a wallet.
He just walked in the place in his boxes and said, dude, I really need a condom. The guy's like, clearly you do. Just take this one. That's fine. Like,
you know what?
Guess what today is?
That if I were in that situation, that guy ran in and his bare feet and boxers,
exactly.
I would have given his box
all the condoms.
Condoms
you want, brother.
Like, I get it. No,
I'm curious why he didn't stop to ask you as he went past you, hey, man, do you have? Like, hello? Why run to the store naked and buy one when it's very likely that you had one?
I can't
that
remember
you could
and
get
I can't tell you that, but I'm telling you he was a man on a mission, and that mission was completed. But he waited a while. That
Oh, this is coming back to the Janet Jackson song.
Oh, yeah.
It turns out.
His friend asked him or posited – this idea that let's wait a while, and he would and then he interrupted her and said, or I run to the store right now in my bare feet and boxers.
I just wonder if you're the guy working at the convenience store and that guy runs in with a half situation going on
situation
equals erection, is that what you mean?
In his underpants. He'd just be like, is it kind of like getting hauled up? Like, it just like, maybe it'd just be better if you shot me. Like, I don't know. Like, anyway. It's been quite an experience.
We should wrap this up.
Yeah.
And as soon as you said wrap it up.
I think that pun was a little intended.
Like the NBC rainbow and star came out of your head.
Yeah.
The more you know. No, when Ryan said wrap it up, like I've known Ryan. We've been friends for over 20 years. And when Ryan just said, kids, we should wrap it up, his body and his the hand that's holding his mic, they slumped at the same time imperceptibly. Like he's not just running on fumes.
Oh, you have no idea how much I want to take a nap right now.
All right, well, we won't keep you, but we should talk about what we're doing next.
Next week.
And next week is mine.
Next week is yours. So let's talk about what we said we were going to do a little bit more. So
to that end, one of the things that we have kicked around doing, the idea behind Somebody Likes It originally was we take a record that maybe we don't, like, not all of us know particularly well, and we sort of explore that. And we've been through several cycles of this, and one of the things that we want to do is also share some stuff that we're actually fond of, like at least one of us is really fond of and that we might know pretty well, and we'll meditate on that for a little bit and then probably go back to another horrible record that Shane finds, but
probably gonna be me.
But I thought and next cycle is me, right?
Yeah, yes. It is.
Yeah, so I'm thinking let's do the Air Miami record.
Oh, yeah, I think I bought you that, but I actually don't know it very well.
Yeah, so anyway.
I don't know that at all. I know the record, but I'm not familiar.
Yeah, so we're going to do, next week we'll do Air Miami.
That's really cool. That's a good pick, Kevin.
There you go. Yeah. And had I chosen it, had we actually been doing this during the World Cup, we could have talked about World Cup Fever, which is a track off of that record. But
well, hold up before you get too comfortable. Next week, it's my pick for a few minutes with.
Hey, now.
Thanks, Hank.
And I've chosen the sound of Ryan's forehead slamming against the table for 35 minutes.
I've chosen the voice of Ryan's regret.
It's just one song, and that is, and I'm continuing again.
Oh, God.
I feel like that women are just underrepresented.
Just shoot us all.
It's Peaches, Fuck the Pain Away.
Oh, okay. Well, sure. That'll go really well with Air
that
Miami.
That will be entertaining to talk about, if not to listen to.
Yeah. It might be infotaining.
I have to say, like, you guys can't see this. Their shoulders were slumping in tandem across a table. And once I said, Peaches, Fuck the Pain Away, they all said, oh, well, okay. All right. We can do that. Yeah, they were expecting really bad.
I just think of pubes when I hear the word peaches as relates to that artist.
I don't know.
Sure. We'll talk about this next week. Yeah. Ryan, what do you want to do in 2 weeks? That's the record that you know really well.
Christ.
You haven't thought of it. You don't have to say it now.
I'm not going to say it now. Like, I haven't picked it. I've got a couple that are...
Percolating?
Percolating. Thank you.
I like how you say percolating. Yeah.
Anyway, thanks again to Jeff Ryder for coming out today.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff, do you want to tell people where they can go to read your comic that's up now?
Not pertaining to music in any way whatsoever. You can go to cloudwranglercomics.com and download free digital comics. If you like werewolves and you like the Old West and you want to romp around inside my weirdo imagination, that's where you can find it. It's written by me and drawn by a fellow named Stan Chu who lives in New York City.
We will definitely post a link to that. And hopefully, I think anybody that's visiting oneofus.net is going to be interested in the stuff that Jeff does.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Just a way of saying that we know nerds. All right, boys. I think that's about it for this one. I'm Kevin Newsom.
I'm Ryan.
Shane.
Hefe.
And I'm Hefe.
Thanks for coming. We'll see you guys next week.